Art Glass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And it's November 20th, 2012. Hi, how are you doing today? We've got that big holiday coming up on Thursday, Thanksgiving. And although I'd like to think that we all wake up every day being thankful today and this week, it's an especially good time to think about all the things that we are grateful for. And as usual, there's a lot of turmoil going on all around the world, in the United States and everywhere. And sometimes it's easy to lose focus of what's really going on and the things that we should be grateful about. A lot of us are talking about food right now, especially those of us who are vegan and vegetarian, because Thanksgiving is such a turkey-focused event. And I just want to remind all of us to be grateful for what we have. There are so many people that don't even get to have enough food to eat every day. So a lot of us do, a lot of us who are promoting healthy, organic, delicious, plant-based food actually have the privilege to do so. And I have to remind myself of that and be grateful. And we're going to be talking about a lot of fun things today, and I'm going to start with my first guest, Ann Dinshaw. She has a book out called Dating Vegans, Recipes for Relationships. We'll be talking about that today. She's a lifetime vegan and author of Dating Vegans. Her other books include Healthy Hearty Helpings, The Four Ingredient Vegan, co-author with Mary Beth Abrams, and the newly released Apples, Bean Dip, and Carrot Cake Kids Teach Yourself to Cook, co-author with her mom, Freya Dinshaw. Her career as a rowing coach takes her to a variety of locations throughout the United States, where she embraces the challenges of everyday life with focus, persistence, and grace. Anne enjoys sports from swimming to wrestling. She has been fortunate to become friends with many men and experience romantic dating adventures with the help of non-vegan friends who appreciate her vegan cuisine. Anne is building her stone and timber frame writer's cabin in western New York State. She's committed to building bridges as a vegan in a culture that depends heavily on animal products. Welcome to It's All About Food, Anne.
Karen.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
I have so many questions for you.
Okay, good.
So let's start talking. Now, you know, you come from this vegan dynasty, and I'm kind of curious about that. So can we just get started about your early family life? Because you come from a line, it's getting longer, of vegetarians and vegans, which is kind of new in this world. And
sure.
And your parents,
we can talk about that.
Your parents started the American Vegan Society, and that's been going on for so many years, doing wonderful work. So my first question is, what's it like as a child growing up vegan?
Well, I was one of those kids who made a lot of friends easily, so I really didn't share that I was vegan with most people until we happened to be eating something, and then I would just mention that I don't like to hurt animals. And my friends were cool with that. So I like to think it wasn't all that bad being vegan as a kid in the 70s. There weren't so many of those vegan foods available, so it was a lot more difficult to find vegan things to eat when I was out.
Sure.
And I saw a lot of other people who were vegan kids really struggle with it, socially being different, and that was kind of sad.
Now, you went to public school?
I did go to public school.
And there wasn't a lot of social strange pressure around food? Kids can be so so mean, so
I think
judgmental.
So much of it depends on your personality.
Yeah.
I tend to be someone who gets along with people. I don't antagonize them. And if they have a difference of opinion, I respect that they have a difference of opinion. I feel comfortable voicing my own opinion, but I don't try to make enemies. Whereas some people, their personality is just not quite as harmonious as mine.
Mm-hmm.
And kids can be cruel, and they will find a little chink in your armor and pick at it. And I just don't return that type of evil. Right. So people would get tired of trying to find things and move on to something else to talk about.
Yeah, I'm glad you're saying this because people ask me, and they ask other people that are vegan, you know, how do you do it? How do you deal in social situations, especially with holidays coming up? And I think it's exactly what you said. It really comes down to, you know, who we are as a person. It's not really the food. That's just something that brings attention to who we are, whether we have a strong foundation in ourselves, whether we have integrity, whether we believe in what we're doing, and whether we can just let it roll, whatever it is.
Yes, being vegan's always been a very important part of my life, but it hasn't been like the big banner. I don't wear a big tattoo on my forehead saying I'm vegan or anything like that. I usually don't even wear vegan t-shirts. I let people come to me and say, hey, you look great. What do you do? And then I can tell them that I'm a rowing coach and that I'm vegan and things like that, because then they already want my information as opposed to me throwing it at them.
Now, to some extent, you have like this vegan DNA. And now I know your mom, and I had met your father, but I didn't know him very well. And I just know them to be very, very peaceful people.
Yes, well, their story of their romance is actually one of the short chapters in my book, Dating Vegans.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to share too much because I want people to buy the book. But the title of their chapter is The Great Persuader and the Gentle Decider. And so my dad was a vegan and my mom was vegetarian when they first started corresponding. And so my mom shares a little bit about how it was more difficult at that time to become vegan.
I bet. I mean, they were groundbreakers, really.
Yes. And if they didn't marry each other, where else were they going to find a vegan or vegetarian at that time? There were so few of them around.
And there wasn't the internet.
No, but my dad ran a personal ad in Peace News, which was a pacifist weekly newspaper published in England.
Yeah, well, I read that chapter and I enjoyed reading it because I didn't know that, and it was a really lovely story.
Thank you.
Okay, so now you've grown up and you're sticking with it, and you've written this book about dating vegans, and it's really an interesting subject. And like I mentioned before, it really hits on, it really isn't about the food, even though it is about the food. Relationships are hard, period. And just finding common ground, finding a way to communicate, finding a way to respect each other is really the challenge all humans have.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just throw food into the mix and it just makes it so much more challenging. So you shared a lot of somewhat intimate kind of stories in this book.
Well, I tried to keep it rated PG-13.
It definitely was.
At the
there were things between the lines.
if you're smart, you can read into it as far as you'd like it to go. If that's the type of novel you'd like to have, then keep reading in that direction. But I want to let people just draw their own conclusions of what they would do in that situation, and present them with a lot of different types of men, types of people that I dated, and then also a lot of different couples who shared their stories where someone was vegan and someone was not. And you never know who you're going to fall for. We don't know what's going to happen next in our lives, but when that does happen, then you have some ideas of how you might be able to handle a situation gracefully.
Yeah, I know what's worked for me and what hasn't worked for me. I'm someone who pretty much goes with what fate will put in front of me and my intuition. I did try internet dating for a while. I was on veggiedate.com for a while, and it's interesting the way you can check off the things that you want and the things that you don't want. But I found everyone that I met from that, it was a disaster. A lot of strange people.
I find that the things that I have in common with people go so far beyond being vegan that when I made my list, I put vegan down. It was on my list. I thought it was pretty high on my list, but then I counted there were 15 other qualities I look for before vegan.
Yeah, it's hard, though, because it's a vegan goes beyond food. It's a philosophy, and there's a lot of underlying current that makes it harder to be with someone who isn't when you are, even though there are many people that are, and I know them, and I've done it, although I'm not, I'm fortunately, I have a vegan wonderful partner, and he's a great cook, and I'm one of the lucky ones. But it's this, when you know, I know, for me, I don't know how it is for you, but I've been a vegan not all my life, but for decades. And it's hard to see animal food. I see the cruelty and the environmental devastation. And when you really want to connect with someone on that close level and you see them doing something that you may be so at such a deep level so opposed to, it's a big challenge.
I think it's important at that time to remember that you were a wonderful person even before you became vegan, and I think that's an unfortunate thing that many people forget. They become vegan and suddenly they expect anyone that they're going to partner with to have that same level of understanding as they have come to. And maybe they've been vegan for 3 years, maybe it's been 30 years, but what were they like 4 years ago or 31 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And that was, they were still a very dateable person. They still had a lot of great qualities, and they were just waiting for something to bring that out in them. And so if I find somebody who's intelligent, athletic, and healthy, which are my top three things I look for, then I have a lot of things in common with them, and then they might be more interested in trying a dinner with me. And maybe they never had a vegan meal before. Some of the men that I talk about in the book that I went on dates with, I was the first vegan they had ever eaten a meal with. So if I had just written them off as being, well, you're not vegan, I'm not going to hang out with you, then they would never experience what a vegan meal is. And you never know what's going to be the catalyst to get someone thinking.
Well, absolutely. And you mentioned this in your book, but is there an undercurrent of wanting to make everyone vegan?
Well, in my book, I purposely for 1 year did not date anyone who was vegan. So I had to find men who were not vegan. And I wasn't trying to go out and convert them, but I was really trying to understand them.
Yeah.
And to see, you know, could I really like these men for who they are, and in some cases for who they might be willing to become?
You're a good person.
Thank you. Well, I also think it's very important to be inspired to be with someone, and so I had to meet many men on first dates and then decide, you know, did I want to pursue this? And when you're writing about someone, that's pretty deep to be inspired to write about them. And I wanted all the stories to have a slightly different angle to them, so I wasn't writing the same story over and over again. So I think I was really blessed with finding a wonderful variety of men who really taught me a lot, too.
Can we talk about your career as a rowing coach for a few minutes?
Sure.
So that requires a lot of physical stamina and skill. And how does your diet help with the physical activity? I'm assuming it does.
I think it does. I don't stray from being vegan on purpose. Occasionally I may accidentally eat something, or I may try something for research purposes that are not vegan, and I really don't feel as good if I had that bite of cheesecake so that I could figure out how to make a vegan cheesecake that someone would like. I think it's important for me to occasionally do that type of thing because I have no background and what things taste like that are not vegan. But I also get some of the similar effect if I eat vegan junk food, if it's a whole lot of cake and cookies and fried food and things like that. I just feel kind of sluggish, and I don't really understand how people can do that to their bodies every day and have the energy to perform, especially as a high-level athlete.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I think we have some pretty powerful minds, and we can push the human body very, very far. Mm-hmm. And people don't even know how good they can feel. I like to say that a lot.
Yes.
But I also think people lose some vitality where if they're eating junk all the time, they don't know, their body kind of gives up on getting things out, and it may take a few decades to ultimately feel the, what's the word I'm looking for, to ultimately experience the downside of what you've been doing for so long. But when you're eating healthy and you put some junk in your body, the body just goes, that's not going down, it's coming out right
yeah,
now.
And the really sad part is sometimes someone will try being vegan, and their bodies are so used to the junk and they've adapted to the junk that they eat a vegan meal or they eat, you know, a couple of days of vegan food and they don't feel as good because their body suddenly is trying to get rid of all this other things that it's been storing up. And so I've got one page in there about the, well, the farting.
That was really funny. But it's so true.
It is. It's important to understand that, you know, when a non-vegan eats with a vegan, they may experience giddiness, increased energy, and flatulence because they're eating more plant-source fiber. There may be adjustments in their digestion. And so everybody's got to give them a little space to adjust.
Yeah, it was amusing to read that, and I guess when you're trying to get to know someone, you want to be on your best behavior. But I read all kinds of humorous anecdotes about how when people are dating, like when men and women are dating, there's never a problem with flatulence, and then when they get together, all of a sudden, the guys tend to let loose. But it is true that when you change your diet, any diet, if what goes in changes, what goes out is going to change.
It is. And, you know, if you're in a relationship and the person is really meant to be with you, they will find ways to take a quick walk outside
mm-hmm.
or things like that. And you just have to be understanding about it. I also try to make sure that I don't feed them anything that they wouldn't like. So I make a point of asking somebody if I'm going to make a meal for them. I ask them what are their favorite vegetables and what kind of foods are they allergic to or what things do they not like. So they're at least eating foods that they're willing to try and excited about.
And if anyone's making a meal for someone, shouldn't they ask those questions anyway?
You would hope so.
Yeah, but they don't. But
I've very rarely been asked those questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it really makes you more sensitive. So, okay, you're going to date someone, they know nothing about you. Do you let it out of the bag right away?
Definitely not.
Why not?
I usually, well, it depends. If we're going to eat somewhere on the first date, then they're going to find out by the end of the meal. I might not tell them that I'm writing a book about dating vegans. I would usually save that until the second date or something. But, no, I want somebody to like me for me first.
Mm-hmm.
And being vegan is one quality amongst so many. And our culture is just coming around to being very accepting of being vegan. But I've been vegan for 42 years, where I remember the years when people didn't know what the word meant.
That's right.
And so I hesitated to even say that I was vegetarian. And so it's very refreshing now to be able to say, I'm vegetarian, and someone will go, oh, like a vegan? Oh, that's great. I know my sister is a vegan. Or they always know somebody else who's a vegan, and they try to relate to you in that way.
That's so true. And then they might also read the menu for you. Oh, you can eat that. Oh, you can eat that. I don't know, it was about 10 years ago. I was single, and I took some intensive ballroom dancing classes, like 2 months every day. And I was dancing, and you'd meet all kinds of people. And I wasn't there to meet anyone. I was there to learn to dance. And I think there were certainly a lot of people there that wanted to meet other people. And I found that if I thought a guy wanted to get to know me better, I would say right away, I'm vegan.
Well, one of the stories in my book, Victoria Moran, she made a point of telling the man who's now her husband right away that she's vegan because she wanted to get it out there in the open. And I think for a lot of people that works. You know, this is who I am. It's a huge part of who I am. I'm vegan. And these days, as soon as somebody gets my last name, they can Google me on the internet, and then they find out I'm an author, and, well, it's not a secret for long that I'm vegan.
Right, yeah. I want to get back to that funny topic of what goes in and what comes out, and the flatulence, but not only that, but smells. And you mention bringing having the person you're dating maybe bring a toothbrush with them because there's this idea of not wanting to kiss someone who eats meat. There was an article or something went around maybe like 7 or 8 years ago in Australia, I think it was, where these people were talking about how they could not be involved. They were vegans and they would not kiss someone who ate meat because it tasted so bad. And as a result, I was interviewed on Geraldo to talk about vegans dating meat eaters. But there is definitely something to the tastes and smells a body will have based on the food we eat.
Yeah, so that's what inspired my top 9 ways to get dumped by a vegan chick.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's written slightly humorously, it does make you think. So the number 2 reason is kiss her after eating meat without brushing your teeth. Well, it's amazing how many non-vegan men have read this book and have told me they never even really thought about that.
Right. They don't, yeah. Well, that's why you're here, so that they will think about these things.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to be listening.
Yes.
Yeah.
And some of them just skip down to number 9, have silk sheets on your bed that coordinate with your wool blanket, down comforter, and feather pillows. And they go, wow, I thought it was all about the food. Now
right.
What am I going to do?
Yeah, I liked some of those tips about maybe making some food and wrapping it up in, what was it? Looking for that here. I liked it very much.
If you're
much.
Trying to keep the vegan woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can wrap up a food gift in anything. Let's see. It says here, in a scarf of her favorite
oh,
color
that's
instead
right.
of using
yeah.
wrapping paper.
Yeah, I like
shows your
that
creativity
uh-huh.
and concern for environment, but make sure the scarf is not made of animal products such as silk or wool.
It's all about connecting the dots and paying attention. And, you know, whether I think I don't want to make a global statement, but many people that are vegan think about a lot of things because they realize, especially if they weren't vegan from birth, they realize that they kind of were sleepwalking for a while and then had this epiphany, and then you want to apply it to everything in life. A lot of people just aren't paying attention.
Well, a lot of that is American culture.
Absolutely.
That a lot of people seriously believe that food comes from a store. And it comes neatly packaged, and they don't think beyond that. Where did it come from before that? It was actually a living, feeling animal before it became a package you bought at the store.
Right.
And so we talk about that a little bit in the book. Would you rather be with somebody who knows where his food comes from? One of my friends bought a whole cow and had it slaughtered.
Mm-hmm.
Would I rather be with him? And, you know, he picked one cow, and he's got 3 years' worth of meat. Or would I rather be with somebody who has no idea and just picks it up off the store shelf? Well, maybe those aren't the only two options, but what if I fell in love with the guy who bought the one cow?
Yeah. Okay, all kinds of choices and things to think about. Let's just, we just have a few more minutes left. Let's just talk about food, because that's what this show is all about. It's all about food. And do you have some favorite date food?
I have a lot of favorite date food.
Mm-hmm.
There are 51 great recipes in Dating Vegan's Recipes for Relationships, and each one of those were created for a particular person that I was dating or supplied by a pair of people who shared their story with us. And so I'd have to say probably my favorite recipes are the cookie recipes, and that's because cookies are such a universal thing. There are so many people who love cookies. They're easy to transport. They're easy to make a nice little package to give to someone as a gift. I've got chocolate macadamia nut cookies that are just completely decadent but easy to make. And so I've got to say that's definitely one of my favorites. But you can't live on just desserts. Even if you're like me and eat dessert for breakfast, you still need some real food in there. So I think my favorite ones are the ones from Brad Holdren's story, because he challenged me to make him like Brussels sprouts.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
I love
hid
that
Brussels sprouts in everything I made for him, and he loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Brussels sprout curry with red quinoa, and we had a soup. It was a mushroom soup, and it had Brussels sprouts in it, and a veggie pie with Brussels sprouts in it. And it could have been any vegetable. It didn't have to be Brussels sprouts. But anyone who challenges me that way, I really enjoy someone who presents a great challenge.
It's funny that you bring up Brussels sprouts. I love Brussels sprouts. But I remember maybe like 20 years ago, I was at a friend's house. We were all together for Thanksgiving. It was Thanksgiving of all things. And one of my friends brought Brussels sprouts as a dish. And a bunch of us, we were all looked at her like, oh, Brussels sprouts, what's wrong with you? It was so not cool, and I didn't think I liked them at all, and I have really grown up quite a bit since then because I love Brussels sprouts. And thank you for joining me, and it's all about food.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
And where can people find more about you? Do you have a website, or they just get your book, Dating Vegan's Recipes for Relationships?
Well, the easiest thing to do is to buy my book, because you learn a lot about me in it. If you go to AmericanVegan.org, you can click through to a Dating Vegan's web page as well.
Okay, great.
And you can order the book there.
AmericanVegan.org, that's the American Vegan Society, of course. Thank you again, and have a really happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. I'm Karen Hartgless. You're listening to It's All About Food. I wanted to mention, go to my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. And if you're still on the fence about what to make for Thanksgiving, we have a wonderful Thanksgiving celebration feast with 7 luscious recipes. So I hope that you check that out, responsibleeatingandliving.com. We're going to take a break and then come back, and I'll be talking with Terry Hope Romero with her new cookbook, Vegan Eats World. Hello, I'm Karen Hartgless, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Here we are, the week of Thanksgiving, November 20th, 2012, and I get to talk about what I love most, and that's delicious plant food.
Okay, my next guest is Terry Hope Romero, and she's got another super-duper wonderful, yummy cookbook out called Vegan Eats World. She's the co-author of best-selling books Veganomicon, Vegan Cupcakes Take Over the World, and Vegan Cookies Invade Your Cookie Jar, her first solo book cookbook. Viva Vegan came out in the spring of 2010, and she contributes to Veg News' Hot Urban Eats column and has hosted the public access podcast vegan cooking show, The Post Punk Kitchen. She lives, cooks, and eats in New York City. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
Good. I didn't mention the vegan mashup in here either. How is that going?
Oh, it's going all right. We have season one done, and that is available on DVD, and it's also making its way to various public stations all around. I know it's going to be in San Francisco very soon, if it hasn't already shown. So,
okay,
yeah.
That's exciting. Well, for people that don't know about it, because we talked about it a while ago, but that's with you and Miyoko Shinner and...
Tony Fiore.
There we go, that's right.
And also many guests. We have a lot of people just come on the show as well.
Excellent. And you make wonderful, delicious food.
That's right.
That's good. Okay, so you have this new gorgeous cookbook out. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Are you relaxing now?
Not yet. No, the book, even though it's out, it feels like just the work kind of starts all over again. Telling people about the book and everything.
Right, yeah, there's a lot of work that goes into this. You can just, without even opening it up, just feel it. It's heavy.
Oh, yes, it really is. It's tofu press and heavy.
And I love the colors, too.
Yeah, definitely.
The turquoise, and it's sort of like a creamy tomato.
That's a pomegranate, actually.
Oh, okay. Really? No, on the cover. Yeah, but the binder.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is, yeah. It's like, I guess you're hungry, right?
Yeah, I'm hungry.
Thinking of a nice, hungry, like a nice creamy tomato sauce color. Yeah,
right. Like
yeah,
with a little cashew cream in it or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so first let's talk about this book. How did you do the work to discover recipes from all around the world and then make them your own?
Oh, man. Well, it's kind of a project of a lifetime. Because I've always been interested in all different kinds of ethnic cuisines, and, you know, I love playing with, you know, veganizing things and also taking, you know, ingredients from all these different cultures and seeing what I can, you know, what can I do with them and how can I apply them to, like, things that, you know, you might be already familiar with if you do a lot of vegetarian or vegan cooking, such as, like, tofu and tempeh. And one thing I talk about in the book that it's secretly a cookbook about Queens,
mm-hmm.
about my vegan fantasy of Queens, New York City. Because Queens is one of the most ethnically diverse places in North America. And it's so easy to just travel everywhere, like in a day on the subway, to go find Indian food and, you know, like Greek food and Lebanese food and Korean food and Chinese food and just all these different, you know, like granular variations of it all over the place and all these great markets to find food at that, you know, all my traveling that I did for my previous book all over the borough to find Latin American ingredients, I saw all these other great places that I love to shop at. And I'm like, well, this is what I need to do. I need to take this a step further. And
well,
make Queens vegan.
I'm another Queens vegan, and I echo everything you just said. I love sometimes when I have guests taking them around Queens, which is never what they expected to do, because everybody wants to head over to Manhattan, and Manhattan's great for lots of things. But it's like you said, you can really travel the world right here in Queens and hear every language imaginable. And walk into some crazy ethnic stores and find things that you've never seen before.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, there are more vegan cookbooks coming out now than ever before. This is a great thing. what I want, my wish, of course, obviously, is there are cookbooks that are coming out all the time. That's like the number one seller of books, right? Cookbooks. People are nuts about food and cookbooks. And so it follows that there would be more vegan cookbooks. Ultimately, though, I would love to see that all cookbooks are vegan and we could stop just putting that vegan word on it, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, we're probably a long way from that.
We probably are.
So from now on, let's just think about vegan cookbooks.
And the other thing is, this is, to me, okay, maybe it's just a Queen's cookbook, but I'm thinking it's an American cookbook because this is what we do in this melting pot place. All these people come here, and they bring their traditions, and then we make great things out of them, even food.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And one of the things I can definitely tell you is that I had testers all over America and in the UK and Australia and various parts of Europe and in, you know, Canada. So it's kind of, in some ways, I want to say it's like an urban cookbook because in all these urban centers, you're having such a great influx of people from all over the world, in many countries all over the world. But I also have had people in less urban areas as well surprisingly be able to find, you know, a big Asian market near them in a shopping plaza or like a little Mexican grocery store at the edge of town. You know, like those things are there. You know, it's part of our changing world.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you. Could these testers find the ingredients they needed? And
yeah.
I guess that's because it's not just the United States. It's everywhere. This global thing is happening, and we're all sharing so much. I highlighted a few recipes that really were mouthwatering to me. I wanted to talk about them. So the first one I really can relate to because I'm from New York, and that's the Zen spinach wonton soup. I've had it a gazillion times, and so I was like really smiling when I saw that you put that in there.
Yeah. For any listeners that don't know, it's kind of a riff off of Zen Palette, which is a popular like vegan restaurant chain in New York City that's been around for a long time. I remember in the 90s, in the early 90s when I first started coming to New York City. It might even be older for all I know. And it just was one of those, like, Hallmark soothing things of, you know, classic clear broth Chinese soup with big dumplings, you know, filled with a little bit of seitan or something and a little bit of spinach. And it's just a really, really not, I mean, it was funny. When you get at the restaurant, you get a tiny bowl, but there's something fun about making it at home instead of having a whole pot of it.
Yeah. I just want to... We're having a little trouble hearing you, Terry, so I don't know if it's where you are or what you're on, but I just wanted to make a note of that because we want to hear everything you're saying.
Well,
and right now it's a little garbled.
Okay.
I love the big bowl of soups, the brothy things with noodles, and this has wontons in it. And Zen Palette definitely has a history here in New York. It was groundbreaking. It's kind of been overwhelmed by some other restaurants, but you know that happens over time. Things change. The next thing, I don't even know how to say it, Dukka, D-U-K-K-A?
Yeah, about right. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Dukka. This is crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's really exciting. For those unfamiliar with that, it's a riff off an Egyptian food that is kind of like somewhere between a dip and an appetizer, but it's a little different than both because it's ground up toasted nuts with lots and lots of different kinds of spices. And traditionally, it's served with olive oil and bread and sort of sprinkled or dipped into. But it can also be used as sort of a sprinkle topping on top of mashed vegetables, or I've been even throwing it in soups and salads because it's so addictive and so hearty. You know, it's something that's just got a lot of substance to it because, you know, you're getting all the nutrition from nuts and all these spices. So it's not just a seasoning. It seems to be, it's much more substantial than that.
Well, it's made from hazelnuts, right?
Yes, it's usually made from hazelnuts. You can throw other nuts in there, too, as well.
Well, you know, it's something like this. Okay, we've heard it a million times, people, when you talk about being vegan, and people say, oh, but I can't give up cheese. Cheese is like this salty, fatty thing that makes things taste good to people. I even remember I lived in the south of France for 4 years, and the French guy that I was with, he kept saying that he loved my cooking, but everything I served, he would just grate some cheese on top of it, which was really very frustrating. But something like the stucco, which has the fat, it has the flavorings, but it's just so much, I would think, it's so much more interesting.
It's very fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something to play with. Okay, so the next one that really popped out on me, I love pancakes and crepes and playing with all kinds of flours, but coconut crepes?
Yeah, that's a traditional Vietnamese food. It's kind of like a big like stuffed pancake, and it's bright yellow because it's got a lot of turmeric, which is really good for you in there. And, you know, traditionally it has, you know, might have some kind of seafood baked into it, but it's really just as delicious with just, you know, lots of sprouts and onions. And this one I like to throw a handful of spinach before you fold it over, omelet style. And then you kind of tear it apart with your hands and you dip it in a dipping sauce. And they're really great.
Yeah, so amazing. Well, I like, I don't often learn about new things, but that one was definitely a new one. And another one, red bean ice cream mochi dumplings. Now, everybody loves dumplings, but these are made out of things I never heard of before.
Yeah, well, that's a dessert. So
yeah.
I'm calling it a dumpling in kind of like a very general sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's mochi. So if people aren't familiar with mochi, it's a chewy, sweet rice dough that is consumed all, you know, in all kinds of Asian countries. And in this case, it's sort of modeled after the Japanese version where they take the dough and it's, you know, sweetened with a little sugar and it's rolled out and then you wrap it around traditionally things like red bean paste as like a dessert you eat with tea. And in this case, this is sort of a fun riff off of, if you've ever seen, they have mochi dumplings filled with ice cream. And, you know, they're almost never available vegan. And playing at home, it was easy to find out, hey, I can do this at home. And
mm-hmm.
red bean is one of my favorite flavors for ice cream that you almost never find vegan. Like, it's almost impossible to find a red bean. You know, now it's easier than ever to find very good vegan ice cream in the stores. But, like, we're kind of missing out on some really fun Asian flavors, and one of them is red bean. Red bean is like the chocolate of you know, Asian ice cream flavors. So this one is just a simple, fast dough that you can make at home quickly, and then, you know, you can kind of just, you know, flavor, like, your favorite vanilla vegan ice cream with some red bean paste, and, you know, with a little bit of, you know, a little bit of time on your side, you can make these cute little desserts. Dumplings that you take out of the freezer for a minute and serve, and they're really fun. They're really cute. They're great for parties. You know, they're just great.
Yeah, I like it. So, Vegan Eats World will tell you how to do that. Basically,
yeah.
It's Thanksgiving, and I wanted to talk about Thanksgiving and about traditions. So you celebrate Thanksgiving, yes?
Yeah, sure.
Do you have some traditional stuff from your family and culture?
You know, the funny thing is I actually just did a Thanksgiving post on my blog, and one of the things I was thinking about is that, you know, you see all these menus for Thanksgiving posted. You see them all over the place in magazines this time of year, but no one I know actually makes an entire menu.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everybody likes to make this sort of mishmash of traditional favorites, very Thanksgiving-y foods, and maybe try one or two brand new things. Personally, I almost never have my own Thanksgiving, unfortunately. I always have to go to someone else's house.
Yep.
So I'm never making a whole meal at my house. It just doesn't happen, you know. And I don't really have too many traditions from, like, Venezuelan food. I don't really tend to do that. But one thing I would make that comes from the Polish side of my family for Thanksgiving are pierogies. I'm not doing that this year, but if I was going to make one thing that I grew up eating are pierogies, and pierogies are definitely a vegan eat world.
Yeah, and it's a great Thanksgiving food because it's that comfort potato-y kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well, I love Thanksgiving, and I used to make big dinners here, complete menus, and I was just mentioning earlier we have an entire food show with a complete menu on ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com's website, and it's got some of my favorite Thanksgiving recipes. Like you, I am going to family, and it's a big mix of lots of different dietary requirements. There was a funny cartoon in the New Yorker a couple years ago, and I thought, oh my God, this is so my family. It was a circle of people, and one was one was low salt, one was low fat, one was vegan, one was dairy free, one had celiac, and one had nut allergies, and it's basically like that. So it's really kind of an interesting potpourri. But the thing is about tradition, and I want to relate it to your book, because some people are so stuck on tradition. You know, that's the way my mom made it. That's the way my grandmother made it. That's the way it should be, especially when it comes to turkey on the table. I think we know that the original Thanksgiving was not like the Thanksgivings that are considered traditional today. Recipes are dynamic. They change. They get better. Your recipes in this book are a testament to that. You're taking things that people make, and then you're doing your thing with it. And that's always what recipes have been about. They're somewhat traditional and somewhat not.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if someone has to make a traditional Thanksgiving, they're going to do it, right? But the kind of funny thing is, I mean, I listen to people talk about their Thanksgiving dinners and the ones that they go to travel, and you hear a lot of complaining.
Yeah, I'm complaining.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
about the traditional dishes that people always make, that they're made at year after year, that are not good, but they're made because they have to be made, you know, and I don't know what to tell you other than, you know, it may be one of those things where you have to talk to your hostess or host, you know, whoever is working on, you know, presenting the Thanksgiving and saying, hey, you know, I'd like to bring something. I'd
yeah.
like to bring something different or new, and is that okay with you? And it, most of the time it is, you know. I mean, you'd be surprised, especially, I think, in this world, like the cartoon you were talking about, of, you know, where everybody has a different food requirement or allergy or need or belief, that it's becoming a more widely accepted that not everybody can eat the same exact spread, and that bringing your own food, at least one dish, just one dish, is okay.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. It's funny because where we've been going for a few years, we've all been bringing stuff, and this year we were told nobody, everything's taken care of. We're not supposed to bring anything.
Oh, boy.
I'm like, oh, my God, I'm scared. but for me, Thanksgiving has always been that time to indulge, and my form of indulging is nowhere near what other people do when they indulge. It's kind of ridiculous, but I eat a very clean diet, and Thanksgiving I think of all the comfort foods that I don't normally eat, like a really rich mashed potatoes and more than one dessert, pumpkin pie and apple pie, and cornbread that's rich, and gravies, and I don't usually make lots of different foods and make them rich, and this is the one time that I want to do that. And when I'm eating somewhere where I'm not getting those foods, it's a little disappointing. So it's all about expectation, and you shouldn't have mm-hmm. any. And if you
yeah.
want a certain food, make it when you want to.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of operate that way around certain holidays.
Make your own Thanksgiving.
I mean, that's one of the things I find out with a lot of people is that a lot of, especially with vegans, is that you always hear about the other Thanksgiving they're having, the one that's before or after the actual date.
Yeah.
The one that they're really excited about eating.
That the Thanksgiving is really a very focused vegan thing. There have been a lot of events around turkey-free Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving, and I don't know how it all got started, because so many different holidays and meals center around meat, why we chose this particular one as like the one that we own. But there is a lot of focus on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I think it's because there is that one central animal that's at the middle of it all, you know? And I think because it is very American.
Yeah.
You know, here it is. This is a holiday that doesn't have any particular, no particular religious affiliation, and, you know, and that, you know, is sort of built up, you know, kids get all those days off, and, you know, a lot of people get work off, and people travel. This is the biggest travel day of the year.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense to me that this is the holiday to co-opt.
Definitely. Okay, so what's next?
I don't know.
I mean, you've conquered the world. Are you
going
to go out of space now?
I know. It's kind of, that'd be a great vacation. There is another book in the works. I have to start thinking about it very soon. I had a couple ideas out there, but I think I might start asking my fans, what do you guys want from me next? Whatever it is, it's going to be a smaller book. It's definitely going to be in smaller scope and scale, but still fun. Fun and, you know, hopefully filled with food that you know, is delicious and will, you know, help people expand their culinary horizons.
Good. Well, as long as it's fun, that's what's important.
Yeah.
Important. Fun and savoring. I like this, the way you say international recipes for savoring the planet. That's a very nice play on words, because so many of us are always saying saving the planet. I get it. And
yeah.
We're savoring while we're saving.
Yeah.
Very clever. I almost missed that. I just caught it. Oh, Terry, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food, and thank you for keeping us inspired with some really good, delicious recipes that are clean and cruelty-free and delicious and yummy, and why wouldn't everybody want to eat like this? I don't know.
That's right. Awesome.
Yes, thanks for joining me, and go forth and do more good food work.
Thanks, Karen.
You're welcome. Okay, so we just have a few minutes left, and I wanted to get back to talking about my favorite recipes, because it is Thanksgiving, and as I said before, it is important to me. Some of the things in this food show that we've put together, one of the recipes that I'm really excited about is a savory pumpkin pie. So there's a few key ingredients that a lot of us connect with when it comes to Thanksgiving. It's the sweet potatoes or the yams, and potatoes and corn, hearty, satisfying foods. So I came up with this pumpkin pie, and I was so excited about it because the crust is a dough that I made from pumpkin seeds, and I didn't use any oil. I'm always on a mission to make food that's healthy and delicious, but also limited in the foods that aren't so good for you. I try to stay away from oil. I try to stay away from salt. And when I'm making a pie crust, it's usually made with a lot of margarine and oil. And then when I figured out I could make it out of seeds, which provide the fat, but it's a healthy fat and it's a fat with fiber, I was really excited. So I made this savory pumpkin pie. You can also use this pumpkin seed crust for sweet desserts as well. And if you're looking for something to bring to a party, try this savory pumpkin pie. I show you how to make it. I give you the recipe, and it's all at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Just click on the left sidebar. We have a Thanksgiving celebration feast page with the recipes. And then another one of my favorite recipes that's included in this program is the cassoulet. Now, the cassoulet is based on a French dish. I know this is an American holiday, but we take a lot of things from the French when it comes to food. Why not? And the French wouldn't even like me calling this cassoulet because it doesn't have the basic ingredients that they put in it, which is a lot of different meats. But it's a white bean herb stew with a Dijon mustard sauce in it. And it's really hearty, creamy, very satisfying. It can even be a centerpiece or a main dish. It's colorful. It's beautiful if you put it in a really nice casserole dish. Or you could put it inside a carved pumpkin. That's another thing that I like to do. People are so focused on the centerpiece for Thanksgiving. And why not use a carved pumpkin like a terrine, where you could put a soup or a bean stew in it? Just a few last-minute ideas for you, and we show you how to do it. And then a few of the other recipes. I make this soup. I call it the soup au pis stew. It's another variation of a French recipe, but it very much reminds me of the harvest, which is what we're celebrating during Thanksgiving, the harvest, and it has turnip and leeks and carrots, root vegetables, pureed into a really lovely creamy soup. It's a great starter, and it has that lovely pumpkin orangey color, which is so Thanksgiving. But I want to save the best thing for last, and that is We have a pumpkin spice ice cream. Everybody loves this. It's really a treat. It's made from coconut milk and has those great Thanksgiving spices, the ginger and the cloves and the nutmeg. And it's such a wonderful, easy-to-make ice cream, and you can top it on all the other desserts that are being served, the pumpkin pie, the apple pie. I like to make poached pears, something really clean and simple, and then pair it. Oh, no pun intended, with the pumpkin spice ice cream. So just visit it, responsibleeatingandliving.com, and I hope you check out that food show. If you have any comments at any time about food, about my interviews, if there are people that you think we should have on this show, send me an email at info@realmeals.org. I really love to hear from you and about what it is that you want, just like Terry Hope Romero was just talking about asking her readers what they want next. Thank you, and have a very happy, happy, delicious Thanksgiving and a delicious week. Bye-bye. Thank you.